Welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. This is Kevin, the host. True Wealth, brought to you by Coins Plus, 444-0044, toll-free 877-TAP-COIN, or through the website at coinsplus.com. Of course, True Wealth is and has been for many moons your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker, dealer, depository service. We buy and sell all forms of rare coins and precious metals. We specialize in helping you preserve your capital, build portfolios in a very firm, long-term, proven, biblical manner. There's certain ways to handle your finances that are just flat wise. If you're as adhered to biblical principles as I am, you would tend to respect that. I have had plenty of experiences. I had a meeting yesterday with a gentleman that I admire greatly. He was the CEO of a Fortune 100 company, basically started literally from sweeping the sidewalks and worked his way all the way to the top. And then eventually he had an accident, kind of an unfortunate thing, and went through a hard time, and then moved out and got better, and now he owns a very, very successful business. He's a great Christian man. But anyway, we were, he's older, 60s, and we were discussing, you know, money and his life and investing. And one topic that came up was our experience with money and brokers and finance. And he and I have a common acquaintance, I guess we'll call it, that is a, you know, pretty good sized broker, but he's a Christian. And we started to share stories about things that have happened to people that we know, not just with him, but with other of similar sources. And the bottom line was that we both concluded is that the brokerage business, the paper investment business, it really is a sham. I mean, you can talk to people. I've been Series 6 and 7 licensed. I spent years, you know, with my head in that business, you know, finance, banking, investment stuff, all of it. And you can spend years and years, decades, and people don't make money. I mean, and what happens is the market, as the market, quote unquote, the Dow, creeps up and up, your investments don't increase commensurately. And then when the market collapses, you take a pounding like no one's business. We discussed, you know, companies that have collapsed, experiences that we had. I mean, over the years, I believe what I believe now. God's given me wisdom and insight based on an extensive background of, you know, in every financial arena possible. And I've been on the other side. I've taken big baths. I've gotten pounded. I've lost on a couple of occasions 100% of my investments in companies that were rock solid. Back in the 90s, early 90s, there was a company, some kind of advanced viral research or something, that had supposedly a cure for AIDS. And, you know, and they had convinced everybody. And I had a friend who was a doctor who, you know, just was making a bunch of money on biotechs because it was this little mini bubble. And he just kept pounding me. Somehow he convinced me to put a bunch of money in against my common sense. And it wasn't, you know, a short period of time. He and I both lost everything. He literally turned, a friend of mine turned $250,000 into $25,000 in no time. And folks, people forget about that. The comment that my friend that lost all that money said to me was, well, it was never really my money. It was God's money. And it's like, dude, you are a steward. You know, you look at the examples in the Bible, like I said, Joseph and Daniel. Joseph is a great story of stewardship. It is a guy who was able to forgive being accused of rape, locked in prison. You know, the immeasurable And you know that he had to be a shrewd businessman. He had to be good at what he did. And he got elevated because of his stewardship. We are accountable for what God gives us. If we blow our money and say, well, it doesn't matter anyway, it was God's, what does that mean? Does that mean if it was ours, it would matter? But since it's God's, it doesn't? The other conversation, my life seems to go in little chapters, I suppose, little themes. But the other conversation I've had with a couple people lately is the concept that money doesn't matter. Another friend of mine has a large charity, and he's very involved in the church, and he struggles with asking for money. And I said, that is foolish, because you want money, because his charity is a terrific, terrific, terrific charity, but he can't do anything without the money. And I'm like, you can't be ashamed to ask for the money. And a lot of times, folks, we pray for God to do something, and we literally, I think, expect to kick back and have it drop in our lap. And I just don't see that. I believe that God gives us opportunities. He makes a way. You know, God will make a way. And that is what we need to realize. But we need to be able to jump right into that way when the opportunity arises. And so I think it's important that we absolutely take responsibility for our own actions. And I talk about this regularly, and then I still talk to people that listen to the radio and stuff that have this super hands-off attitude with God. Like, you don't need to do anything. He does everything. That's not the point of resting in Him. The point of resting in Him is knowing you are doing the right thing. When you are trusting in God and you are focused on God and you're doing what He asks you to do, you know then you're doing good. You live in the Spirit, you get driven by the Spirit, you have your gut, whatever you want to call it, and you're doing His will. But you're doing it wholeheartedly. You're doing everything as unto the Lord. You're giving it 100%. You're focusing. You know, the Bible's very clear about hard work, energy, effort, focus. Those things, in America now, we're getting overwhelmed with socialism. But if you think about it, our nation is built on Judeo-Christian ethics. This country was founded by the colonies. You work, you eat. You don't work, you don't eat. Obviously, if you're disabled, that's different. But that is where, that's even a biblical principle. That's a scripture. I believe it's in James or wherever it is. You don't work, you don't eat. You reap the rewards, the benefits of your own labor, the labor of your hands. You've got to do something. Now, I know there's people out there that are in certain situations, and they're like, trust me, Kevin, I'd do anything to work. I'd do anything to do this, to do that. I can't find a job. A lot of this is because you've got a structured mindset of how it's supposed to look. You believe that you're supposed to find a company to hire you to provide you an income. But America was founded on rugged individualism. And what that means is there's things you could do. You could power wash people's houses and driveways. You can shovel snow. You can mow lawns. You can clean gutters. You might be able to wash windows. I don't know what you're good at. You may be able to wash cars. You can start a business. There's a number of ways. A lot of times people will try to start a business by selling a product, like Mary Kay Cosmetics or something, which usually doesn't work out very good because they're pyramid schemes and they're limited. But, you know, you can go out and you can work and you can find ways to make a buck. You can see a need and meet it. Here at the building, I've had kids, one in particular here a little bit ago. He walked in and he said, hey, sir, I notice your parking lot is dirty, which was a nice word for filthy. Winter had just ended and there was garbage everywhere. He said, you know, do you mind if I clean it up for you, you know, for some income or whatever? And I said, well, what do you want? you know, and I don't remember what he said, 20 bucks or whatever it was. I said, sure. And I said, now that kid's got some, you know, that's got some serious innovation, some serious drive. So he cleaned up the front. I gave him 50 bucks. And then just because I'm like, I said, kid, you got what it takes. This is what I like to see. And then we put him to work and we had him do another couple other, you know, a few hours worth more of stuff. I gave him like 125 bucks. I overpaid him, but I wanted to reward him for that level of innovation and that level of drive. I mean, this is what we can do. There are needs all over the place that we can find. You know, there's people who, you know, I know a guy who owns a business that is essentially looks like a junkyard. He's got tires, he's got metal, he's got all kinds of stuff. He had a kid come and look for a job, and he said, I don't have any work. He said, what about your yard? It's a mess. Why don't I clean that up and organize it for you? He said, you wouldn't know how to do it. He goes, why don't you let me try? And the kid said, how about if I do a good job and organize it well, you know, you can pay me this amount per hour. If you don't like my work, you don't have to pay me. Well, this kid ended up not only organizing this business, he ended up working for the guy and becoming his right-hand man. And the kid, I would say, he's probably 2 years from owning the business, and the guy does very well at what he does. So there's always a way. You pray, God opens doors, but it has so much to do with opportunities. I just am a firm believer that God provides an opportunity. That is what I personally believe is how God works. And then it's up to us to go ahead and take advantage of that opportunity. And, you know, he can make a way. God is good. God cares for us. He's, you know, there's all kinds of, you know, Philippians, for it is God who is at work in you both to will and to work for his good pleasure. Do all things without grumbling or disputing. There's a lot of different things. Spirit that we have to join the world with or reflect to the world. Philippians 2:15, so that you will prove yourselves to be blameless and innocent. Children of God above reproach in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you appear as lights in the world. And then it goes on, holding fast the word of life so that in the day of Christ, I, being Paul, have reason to glory because I did not run in vain nor toil in vain. But, you know, the whole point about doing everything without grumbling or disputing so that you'll prove yourselves to be blameless. Blameless is a key word. Blameless and righteousness, those kind of words are very intimidating. If we misunderstand God's intention with them, they can be discouraging because, you know, if you look at it wrong, it's all up to us. The point is in being blameless is just behaving in a manner that is generally without fault. You don't have to be perfect as far as, you know, the problem is to each of us, the definition of perfect is different. You know, Christ-like is good. Being able to control your speech, being able to control your thoughts, being able to control your behavior. And by the way, the thought thing, you know, Christ made it clear when he said, you know, if you've looked after a woman, you've already committed adultery or whatever. And there's people that take that way too far. You know, I actually had a situation where we had a cleaner who was getting divorced, and she hadn't been married long. And I sat down with her and talked with her and was trying to get my head around it. And when divorce comes along, I'm looking for biblical reasons. You know, there's basically the four A's, and they have to be severe, which is adultery, addiction, abuse, or abandonment. And those have to be extreme. And factually, folks, I'm going to tell you right now, a divorce is not always wrong, and divorce occurs. I've never been divorced. I've been married 30 years, so I'm not trying to, you know, justify myself or anything like that. But it happens. There's a time we make huge mistakes. People get into marriages that are miserable. From a Christian perspective, I've seen it. I've seen people do everything in their power to try to save it. I've seen them live in misery. I've seen women be just severely mistreated by believing and non-believing husbands. And we, in general, need to accept the fact that you know, there is a time and place. It says God hates divorce. We need to do everything we can not to engage in it, but there is a time and a place. People, youthful people, make mistakes. They get divorced too young without really trying. There's a lot of foolishness, but there is a time and a place for it, and it's not every marriage isn't going to survive. It's not because it should. It's because the mistake was made long before the marriage was consummated. And I'll just put that out there because some people carry around guilt. And, you know, Christ talks about the fact that adultery has been committed, and or Paul does, actually. That's, I think, where it comes from. And the thing about Paul, the weird thing about Paul is in Acts 21, Paul comes back. There is some bizarre theology out there, folks. And I, you know, I don't know if I want to get into it right now. I guess I could go down that. I could go down that tangent a little bit. Let me look it up. See if I can do a little explanation on this and just blow people's minds and get everybody mad. Moving into Acts 21 in the Bible here. Oh, boy, we're moving slow, aren't we? Great, 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 great. Where are you, baby? All right, there we go. Get to my version I like. Okay, let's see if I can get here. When we had finished the voyage, when we'd heard this as well, then Paul answered, "What are you doing weeping?" Oh, boy. After we arrived in Jerusalem. Oh, I should have been more prepared. I apologize. Here you. Okay, so let's back up. And when they heard they'd become. Okay, after he had greeted them, let's see. Some of the disciples from Caesarea also came with us, taking, okay, and in the following day, Paul went in with us to James, and all the elders were present. So he had come back to Jerusalem, and he'd run into James. And Paul was kind of wrapping up his whole ministry here, or his big trip for however long it lasted. And the following day, Paul went in with us to James, and all the elders were present. After he greeted them, he began to relate one by one the things which God had done among the Gentiles through his ministry. And when they had heard it, they began glorifying God, and they said to him, "You see, brother, how many thousands there are among the Jews of those who have believed, and they are what? Zealous for the law." So James is saying, look at all these thousands of Jews that are so stoked they've accepted Christ and they are on fire for the law. Wait a minute. People have this thing, the law is abolished. We have Western Christianity, right? If you become a Christian, don't you become a Westerner? I mean, this is our mindset. When a Jew becomes a Christian, we expect him to integrate into Western culture. But when I went to Israel, I learned something. Jews are not just, it's not just a nationality. They're God's chosen people. They're given festivals and feasts and traditional behaviors because they're God's chosen people. Whether they believe in him or not, they are bound to God's laws, to God's writings, they're a special group. So it goes on. So it says, James says, look at all these thousands of believers now, and they're zealous for the law. And then he goes on and he says, and they have been told about you, to Paul, that you are teaching all the Jews who are among the Gentiles to forsake Moses, in other words, the law, telling them not to circumcise their children, nor to walk according to their customs. Okay? So Paul's telling them, it's over, it's abolished, you're free, you don't have to abide by all these things as a Jew, you don't need to get circumcised, it's over. Jesus has freed us all, we're liberated. James is going, no, man, that ain't right. They're still Jews. They're still God's people. They're still bound by these laws and rules and regs. And then it goes on and it says, what then is to be done? They will certainly hear that you have come. Therefore, do this that we tell you. We have four men who are under a vow. Take them and purify yourselves. In other words, the vow is an Old Testament, right, a ritual. Take them and purify yourself along with them and pay their expenses so that they may shave their heads and all will know that there is nothing to the things which they have been told about you, but that you yourself also walk orderly and repenting, keeping the law. So, and then it goes on, but concerning the Gentiles who have believed. Okay, then so that's the Jews. Then he says, concerning the Gentiles who've believed, we wrote, having decided that they should abstain. It's very simple. They call it the four edicts. Here's what's expected of Gentiles, because we were not under the law. It says they should abstain from meat sacrificed to idols, from blood, and from what is strangled, and from fornication. Okay, pretty simple. Then Paul took the men, and the next day he purified himself along with them, went into the temple, giving notice of the completion of the days of purification until the sacrifice was offered for each one of them in repentance. When the 7 days were almost over, the Jews from Asia, and it goes on and on, stirred up the crowd, and then things go a different direction. Paul repented for a lot of his teachings. And why I say that is this. He says for the Gentiles, they're under a different set of rules and regs. So when you get into some of the writings of Paul, Paul was one of the greatest students and scholars in history. There is Jewish history of Paul, Saul, being absolutely brilliant. The best of the best, the smartest, the brightest, the most zealous, the most incredible, which is why God converting him was such a big deal. And he was so honored and respected that he, when he said, look, this is real, they couldn't refute it. They couldn't minimize it. He was smarter than everybody. He was an absolute genius. And if you do some historical research on that, you'll see what I mean. So essentially what happened here, without getting too deep into it, there's a lot of writings of Paul, and you know, where he says things like, not the Lord, but I, or, you know, where he's voicing his opinion. And we're saying, oh, this is inspired scripture, and it is. But at the same time, there are things in there that Paul says and suggests, like, I wish that you would not get married. Well, God created woman for man. God created a different system. I mean, Paul says a lot of things that are just not quite right, you know? And I'm not saying I don't read his word and believe in it, but there's a lot of deeper scholarship that goes into this. And some people have done a really good job of showing that some of his perspectives on things, like saying that a woman who's divorced remains in permanent adultery. I'm not voicing an opinion on this. I'm just telling you there's different views. And I don't, like I said, I've never been divorced. My wife's never been divorced. My parents were never divorced. Her parents actually did get divorced, but they didn't get divorced until they'd been married like 35 years. And there was a lot of issues all along. But the thing is, so I'm not, a lot of people go to the word with their own perspective and they try to extract from the word what confirms in their life. And that's not what I'm doing. I'm just saying, some of the writings of Paul, you need to be able to watch between opinion and scripture. And that's a weird concept for people to say, wow, wait a minute, you know, the Bible's the Bible. What's this guy talking about? If you read some of the writings of Paul in depth, you'll see what I mean. And so let's just say I'm spitballing there, throwing out some concepts that I definitely am not in a position to heavily debate with anybody. But I think it's a concept to just consider. The other thing is the fact that the Bible in general has been, you know, canonized to death. And Paul, we know Paul's amazing. Paul was phenomenal. Paul is very likely one of the reasons that we're here today. Missionary work was very important early on. And when you really get into it, you know, a lot of churches say that missions work is the highest calling of a believer. Okay, now I'm not saying that, but there's Baptist churches and whatnot that do this. Where is that in the Bible? I mean, where is that in the Bible? Each of us has a calling where we're at. Each of us has a skill set, the parable of talents. Each of us is to do what God put us here to do. If you're called and you can't resist it to go share the gospel, then go. But I've seen so many situations where we send Americans to other nations where they don't even speak the language, and they're going to, what, go build a church? No. If we need if we need disciples, missionaries, sorry, brain. If we need missionaries in another country, we need to recruit natives. There's a gentleman in Spokane who supports hundreds of natives in West Africa. He pays them all $160 a month, which is the salary over there. But this man is paying hundreds of people this income to share in their native tongue with their native people, in their native culture. That is a lot more sensible. This thing where we go overseas and do these kinds of missions, a lot of that, you know, you'll see that a lot with the Mormon church where they're building their church building. And I know there's Mormons that listen to the show, LDS, and a lot of them believe there's a Christian component to it. There's a lot of stuff that I definitely disagree with severely. And the one thing that is curious to me is just that there's not a lot of philanthropic activity. You'll see a lot of churches or hospitals and pregnancy centers and homeless shelters and all this put out there by Christian churches, but I just don't see that from the Mormon church. And the Mormon church is very wealthy. But they seem, when they're on missions, they seem to be church building almost like a business recruiting. And, you know, that's between them and God and all that. But it's just, I don't know. I don't know where, you know, the biblical standard is for all that. So how I got on that was there was a gal who cleaned for us, and she was getting divorced. And I listened to her story a few times, and I'm like, this is out of line. You are getting divorced. There's no biblical reason here. I knew her husband. Okay guy. He was in ministry and stuff, very immature for his age, liked to play video games too much, which are like addictive. And, you know, anyway, they it was just an immature couple, and she was really kind of a reckless soul. And she had had a rough upbringing and had kind of been pseudo-adopted, spiritually adopted by a pastor and his wife at a church. And during this conversation, the pastor's wife called me and started to lecture me, saying, don't you know what a horrible person this is, and how could you be telling her this and that? And I said the same thing. I go, where is the biblical grounds for this divorce? And she goes, well, don't you know what a terrible person and how mean he's been to her, and, you know, and he'd never gotten abusive or anything. It was just her oversensitivity. And I kept saying, you need biblical grounds. And she said, well, he committed adultery. I said, he did? How is that? She said, well, he looked at a woman in whatever, you know, with lust in his eyes. And I said, are you kidding me? She goes, oh, it says any man who's done that has already committed adultery. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So basically the point of what Christ was saying is all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. He's saying you're not righteous. Now, he's showing you the sin in your heart that you need to be cleansed and forgiven. But on the outside, we are held accountable for our outside actions. We are held accountable, first of all, in the world, on a legal system for our actions. The biggest problem with the liberal mentality, they're coming up with this stuff like unconscious bias. And they want to start to create legislation and collegiate rules against unconscious bias. Basically saying you're biased and you don't even know you're biased. And so we need to change the system to favor those that you're biased against. So it's like a ghost of a ghost. It's like, it's just ridiculous. And this is where this stuff is starting to go. But we can only be held accountable for our actions in this world. Our heart, God says he will judge the heart. But he also will judge our actions. We are going to have many situations where our spirit wants to do one thing. You want to strangle somebody because they say something mean to you, but you don't do it, right? Well, you can't say, oh my gosh, I just killed that person. I'm such a sinner. You can show, you know, there's restraint. And on the outside, you're walking with the Lord. We are all going to struggle with these kinds of things. And the liberal, the big argument now is that they say that thoughts and behavior are inseparable. Well, that's not the case at all. We have to be honest about it. We have to, you know, they say, oh, you have this bias against certain races, and therefore you mistreat them, you discriminate against them. And I say, no, you serve the Lord. And, you know, I actually had this conversation with this liberal gal who wanted to debate it, and she said, well, what are other examples then where thoughts don't affect actions? And I said, what about every time a man is, you know, sees a beautiful woman? I mean, let's be honest, you know, there's things sometimes that cross their mind that, you know, that I'm not saying they're right, but, you know, if they acted on that, you'd have a mess on your hands sometimes. So we need to realize that, you know, our thoughts, we're accountable for our actions first and our thoughts second. And there's been tons of psychological studies showing that your actions will actually change your thoughts. So the whole back to the thing about being righteous and blameless, self-control is the last fruit of the Spirit. Meaning in Greek, the first is last, the last is first. That's just the Greek language. When Jesus said the first shall be last and the last shall be first, they knew exactly what he meant because that's exactly how they did lists by importance. The last is first and the first is last. And we, when we act properly, we begin to change our internal spirit. When we act blamelessly, like I said, self-control is the highest fruit of the Spirit. When we exercise self-control, we begin to change the inside. On a worldly basis, they have a saying called fake it till you make it. If you live a certain way, if you dress a certain way, if you talk a certain way, you will become that person. That's why the kids with baggy pants and piercings and holes in their heads and nose, and it affects the way they behave. I don't care what anybody says. Well, psychologists would agree with me. Dress for success, and we have to live for success. If we live blamelessly, if we control our actions and our attitudes, our spirit will follow. Or if we control our actions, our attitude and spirit will follow. That's just really the point of what I'm making. So when you get discouraged and you say, man, I don't understand how these people do this. I'm so imperfect. The stuff that I think and my desires you pray about it and ask God to change it. But what really matters is, do you execute on that or not? If you struggle with a certain sin and you walk away from it, that's honorable in God's eyes. He isn't going to, you know, just be discouraged that you struggled with it. He's going to be encouraged that you stood against it. That's why he says flee from evil of every kind, but also sexual sin is the one he says get away from because it will literally consume you. It destroys you. It changes you. And the world continues to offer more and more enticing, destructive stuff, you know, to tear you down. So just to simplify the whole point, for Jesus, fake it till you make it, walk the walk, talk the talk, your spirit will follow. That is what matters. And be sincere and be genuine. So, we've had, you know, yesterday Donald J. Trump fired director of the FBI, James Comey. This has been coming a while. It's, you know, I could break down the history. You're probably as knowledgeable as anybody. He's the one that came out during the campaign and said, hey, we're investigating Hillary. And then he backed off on the email scandal. Then he backed off and came back out when they found emails on Anthony Weiner's laptop that were from Uma Abedin, his wife. And they said there's probably confidential information there. And Comey came out. He was very transparent. And people say he's crazy. Whether he is or not, I don't know. But what I can tell you is I think he tried to be transparent because he thought, you know, if I hide any of this information and Hillary gets elected and it comes out that we had all this information and we withheld it, we could be severely liable. James Comey is a liberal, they say. So it wasn't necessarily to swing the election. But first, when he shut the case on Hillary and said no normal prosecutor would prosecute a case like this, and there was no intent, even though the law said it didn't require intent to be espionage, and Hillary had mishandled her confidential emails terribly, I mean, beyond your dreams. And she had her own private server, and she deleted 50,000 emails minimum that we know of. I think the biggest problem is that all the stuff we're arguing about is mute compared to what she deleted. I think she was doing favors. I think there's corruption at a level you can't even imagine. So then James Comey came out later when the Anthony Weiner issue came up. He told everybody they claim it affected Hillary's election. Hillary blames James Comey. However, Loretta Lynch had just met with Bill Clinton on a plane in private, and they want to blame James Comey, but really it was Hillary's actions with her emails that caused the problem in the first place. Had she not engaged, and when people say, oh, it's a minor thing, it's just emails, she was a Secretary of State. She was handling highly confidential information. She had a private server stuck in a house in a closet in Colorado. I mean, and she intentionally tried to hide all this stuff. So there was definitely something there. So apparently Trump, you know, the left has hated this guy's guts because they say he cost her the election and he should go. So Trump apparently gave him a shot. Trump wasn't a big fan of his, I guess, but, you know, he gave him a shot, let him stay there a while to prove himself, and finally let him go. All of a sudden, the left turns table on him and just starts attacking him. Why now? Well, they're saying why now because there's this phony investigation that won't go away about this Trump and the Russian ties, which is the most nauseating, stupid thing I've ever heard. There's not one bit of evidence. There's not one witness. There's nothing comes out. And they keep digging, folks. They're not really looking for that. I think a lot of them have become brainwashed to believe it, and they become conspiratorial. But the truth of the matter is they just want that black cloud hanging over his head. And we are at a point in this country where we have absolutely abused the system. The radical deportation, the division, the destruction, you know, the duplicity, the hypocrisy is beyond anything I've ever imagined. I mean, this is unbelievable. You know, I grew up kind of connected, or at college age, you know, last 30 years, connected with politics. I've never, ever, ever seen anything like this. And so I think we're sitting literally in a position that is so polarized, so destructive, that we just can't even begin to fathom the impact of this stuff. And what's happened is there's all these different things. I've talked about Cloward and Piven's strategy and Saul Alinsky's rules for radicals. And Obama outwardly introduced all this stuff to us. And Barack Obama was a puppet, or whatever you want to call it, an instigator of the progressive agenda to intentionally destroy our economy, utilizing the Cloward and Piven strategy of imposing socialism on America by forcing the physical well-being of every citizen, which was the purpose of Obamacare, legal or illegal citizens, of course, onto the responsibility of the U.S. government. And that plan was designed in line with the Cloward and Piven strategy to destroy capitalism in America, and thus to destroy capitalism worldwide by swelling the welfare rolls to the point of collapsing our economy, and then implementing socialism by nationalizing the maximum number of private institutions, businesses, collapsing and controlling and regulating, hyper-regulating businesses. You've got this weird blend of the Communist Manifesto of Marxism and Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals, both instigated in the pits of hell. I mean, literally just straight out of the pit of hell, completely contrary to God and the Bible. Modern progressivism explains and educates its leaders on how to destroy jobs and productivity and create runaway deficit spending. I'm going to repeat that again. Modern progressivism explains and educates its leaders on how to destroy jobs and productivity. That's their goal. It creates votes. It creates a loyal constituency. People in crisis do desperate things. They want a savior. They want to be rescued. When people are hurting, they want a rescue. And this is the environment that is created by the progressive mindset. They basically explain and educate their leaders how to destroy jobs and productivity, to create runaway deficit spending, to fuel skyrocketing healthcare costs, which we've got, and expenses, and then force an unsustainable system onto the taxpayers through stimulus and bailout programs. And I'm assuming if you've been paying attention for a while to the country you live in, this sounds oddly familiar. This is what we've been experiencing. So the demise of our financial stability structure will lead eventually to worldwide Marxism. Now, we're there in so many ways. They've got this big annoying thing that just keeps preventing it called the Constitution. And it is so inconvenient for so many of these people with this left-wing agenda. They just can't stand it. I mean, they really cannot stand it, but they don't know how to break it down. This is where the anger's coming from. They can't get through. Trump, folks, literally, if Trump would not have got elected, we would be so over the edge now. Hillary would be doing things you can't even imagine. Codifying all of Obama's legacy. Instituting all these hardcore leftist agenda, terrible stuff. I mean, I don't understand the thought process other than it's simple. It's either God or man. That's it. Socialism, leftism, progressivism is governed by man. You rely on man to fix everything. Human secularism. The opposite is our rights come from God, which I heard Trump say the other day to my, you know, pleasing ears. He's becoming more godly. There's lots of rumors and stories that he's surrounded by godly people doing Bible studies and devotions every day and growing in the Lord, which is a great thing. So keep praying for that man. But the demise of our financial stability literally will lead to imminent worldwide Marxism. That is their goal. And then, so you've got the Marxist component. And Obama had such an odd combination. People had a hard time putting them together, which is where the whole Saul Alinsky thing comes in. Saul Alinsky was a radical left-wing Marxist who wrote a book called Rules for Rebels. And he had in there the Rules for Radicals. It was the strategy book that was used by Obama for his methodical destruction of the rule and reign of democracy, as we know, and the republic underpinnings of the USA. In the opening sentences of Saul Alinsky's book, which is highly, highly regarded by the left, and used to only apply to left-wing extremists, it says in the beginning of the book, quote, "The devil challenged authority and got his own kingdom." And that goes to the heart of what the left is really about. That, of course, is to get power in any way you can, including lying, cheating, and stealing. The ultimate rule is that the ends justify the means. This, my friends, is the intro to Saul Alinsky's book. I'll repeat that again. This is at the heart of the left's agenda. You've got to understand, this is what they believe. Again, Saul Alinsky, at the beginning, says, "The devil challenged authority and got his own kingdom." And that goes to the heart of what the left is really about. That, of course, is to get power any way you can, including lying, cheating, and stealing. The ultimate rule is that the ends justify the means. So he's got this Rules for Radicals, but he says the ultimate rule is the ends justify the means. Whatever you need to do to get what you want. If you want freedom, anarchy, to use drugs, rape women, whatever, then you riot, you create mass mayhem, you scream racism, you say discrimination, you brainwash your students, you do everything to change society. In a sexual component, that's also occurring with, I mentioned the other day, the leaders of the riots in UC Berkeley were also the founders of NAMBLA, North American Man-Boy Love Association. They want to tear down our societal norms until they are allowed to recruit young children into sexually deviant activity. The devil loves that stuff, my friends. The devil, if he can destroy your child sexually, he can control your child in every other way. That is at the heart of who we are. And we've got to be so sensitive to this. We've got to be so attentive and astute to what is going on. We cannot lie. We are in a spiritual battle. So Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals is one of the main playbooks of the left. Their guidance and inspiration comes from the noted and professed atheist and anti-morality proponents, Cloward and Piven and Saul Alinsky. All three synonymously agree that America must be destroyed from within and reshaped into a militaristic, socialistic, communistic, and fascist state. This is what Obama believed. He wanted to combine the military, the social structure, communism, and fascism. And no one could quite put a finger on it. What was he doing? He was tearing down our military, but he wanted more than anything. One of his first attempts was to create basically a band of brown shirts like Hitler had. Obama wanted to create this core of youngsters that he even mentioned at one point that he wanted everybody to do a year of government service when they got out of college or high school or whatever it was, high school. It didn't work out, thank you. But the fact is, this was his goal. I mean, if he could take over, folks, he would have. And the left is at a point where they are, you know, I think of the devil. Saul Alinsky quotes the devil. Christ said the devil comes to steal and kill and destroy, period. That's all he can do. He has no original thoughts or ideas. He tears down. And one of the problems is, this is what's going on with atheism and all this. They don't have solutions. It's easy, I say, to protest. It's a heck of a lot different to bring solutions. And these people don't bring any solutions to the table. They just tear down the system as we know it. Well, the system as we know it is built on Judeo-Christian ethics. The system that they want is built on, you know, unfair, inequitable behavior. And the left always, when the left is in rule, minorities live the worst. These inner cities that are out of control are controlled by lefties. I mean, it really is a problem. Every corporate entity that's been run by our government has become a massive failure and an even worse waste of hundreds of billions of taxpayer dollars. You look at GM and all these other things. These entities become embezzlement vehicles for the corrupt elitist politicians to spread the wealth, which is why they want socialism. Socialism gives our leaders, our elitist government leaders, complete and total control of all the money. Look at what our government politicians have done with Medicare and Medicaid, Social Security, the U.S. Post Office, Amtrak, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, Sally Mae, you know, on and on. Every one of these programs is so defunct and bankrupt, and so much money is blowing out the sides unaccountably. The entire exponential congressional budget deficit goes on and on and on. There's no limit to this stuff. And we're not focusing on it now because we thought Trump could clean the swamp. He can't drain the swamp, folks. It is embedded. It is done. It is locked down firmly. There's no fixing it. You get like Chuck Schumer coming out yesterday dousing on Trump for firing Comey. I mean, these people are absolute destroyers. The devil comes to steal and kill and destroy. This is what they do. They absolutely destroy. There is no other way. They just don't do a good thing. They lie and say they're looking out for the small guy. The conservative God-based, biblical thought process, conservative mindset looks out for the little guy. It looks out for every guy. It creates an equal set of rules. We're a land of rules and laws. We're a republic. The left believes we're a democracy. The right says the same rules apply to the little guy and the big guy. The left says crony capitalism. You know, they distribute the wealth to who they feel deserves it, not to who earned it. If you earned it, you're wrong because you don't share in their left-wing policies and politics. And so they want to take from you and give to themselves, essentially, because they don't want to earn it the old-fashioned way. And they, you know, you've heard all their monikers. It's unbelievable. These entities are literally, the level of embezzlement and misappropriation is just incomprehensible. Our, you know, like I said, our budget and so on. Now they want, you know, we've got this government-run healthcare. Trump caved towards this no pre-existing. Folks, when you are insuring 10% of America that has no pre-existing, that 10% becomes 90%. When I was, you know, in any business model, business education, leadership training, everything, they'll always give you the two rules, the 80-20 and the 90-10 rule. The 90-10 rule in America is always like the 10% give you 90% of the problems. It's the 10% of uninsured, which includes illegals and everything else. They are the ones that'll give us 90% of the expenses. How do I know that? Well, they're uninsured. There's no prior condition clause, so that they basically why get insurance? Why do you have this or that? They're unhealthy. You know, it's going to take us down, and everybody else shares the brunt of it, and it will break the back of America, and also the pharmaceuticals mess. The cost of medicine is out of control. I mean, when someone goes into the hospital with a complication, and you know, you're talking the first day is $100,000 or $23,000 a day thereafter. I mean, there's no way to justify that. There's just no way. Nurses aren't making that kind of money. Doctors aren't. The equipment's expensive, but they're amortizing it over tons of patients. So our healthcare system will break our back. So socialism gives these people complete and total control of all the money. And like I said, look at what they've done with Medicare, Social Security, etc. The entire exponential budget's out of control. The real reason they want to control everyone's money without any account is so they can continue to steal hundreds of billions of dollars or even trillions of dollars, like the Department of Defense disappeared under Rumsfeld. Obama handed off hundreds of billions of dollars through his lending policies with no payback provision, no right to cure, no collateral. You know, unbelievable. Among themselves, while the insignificant masses literally ultimately starved to death in the insatiable pit of poverty. And we've got to understand, folks, this is what's going on. Where's the middle class going? Where is the middle class going? It's gone. They're crushing it. So I'm reading some numbers here the other day, and we're out of time again, but I'll bounce this one off of you. We have got a debt apocalypse. Our student and auto loans now are at almost $3 trillion. $3 trillion, $10,000 for every man, woman, and child in America. $50,000 per family in student loan and auto debt, if I did that math right, just off the top of my head. You know, now we've got the Canadian housing bubble that's ready to blow. We've got, you know, mortgage lenders ready to crash. You know, negative, negative, I know. But I'll tell you, it's so important to understand that the agenda, the narrative has not stopped. That's what you're seeing. That's what you're listening to all the time. And I always go back to the fact that, look, they've got an agenda. They're embedded. They're infiltrated. Unless we have a coup of some sort, I don't see us getting out of this thing too healthy. And I always say, you've got a biblical prescription for how to handle your finances. It's simple. We'll help you do it. Precious metals-based assets, precious metals-based portfolio will last you forever. You can pass it on generation to generation. The Chinese are just gobbling up so many of the rare coins now, they're disappearing. They have strong hands. They put these things into centuries and centuries of family dowries. I have a good friend who specializes in dealing with them, and he said these coins aren't coming back. They think on a longer-term basis than we do. We're very short-term speculative-minded. But the way what God gave us is the best. I mean, you take precious metals, bury them in the desert, and pick them out 1,000 years later, you got serious wealth. Try that with your stock certificate. It doesn't work. Try to bury a stock certificate and pull it out of the desert in 100 years. You got nothing. I mean, you don't, you know, it'll collapse and get consumed. It's just not the right way. So if you want to do the right thing and preserve yourself over the long haul, savings, 401ks and IRAs, whatever it is, it's easy. Give us a call, 444-0044, or toll-free 877-TAP-COIN, or the website coinsplus.com. It's a lot easier to talk by phone. So you just give us a call. We'll take good care of you. We'll get you set up, and we'll help you preserve your money in the way you should. I mean, we really will. No one else will do for you what we will do. I'm a huge believer in balance. I think as a steward of God's money, you need to be able to justify every potential reasonable angle. We know we've got a lot going on around us, but we don't always know the timing. But we do know, you know, I'm building a wonderful collection again as an individual, just a terrific collection. I've had good luck in the past. I'm starting to rebuild it again. I really got motivated after my father passed. I've got precious metals and everything else. But numismatic coins over the long haul have just outperformed everything, every imaginable sector. Literally, they go up, you know, 40-fold in 40 years and 30-fold in 30 years and 20-fold in 20 years. I mean, they've just had a terrific track record, and you should capitalize on that. We don't do the whole portfolio on that. We balance out. But just give us an opportunity to help you out, and we will do so. Again, CoinsPlus 444-0044. Thanks again for tuning in. Take care. God bless. I don't believe I'll be here Friday. I think I'll be heading back to see my mother for Mother's Day, and so I'll probably be running a rerun. But again, if you have questions, give the shop a call, and we would be happy to help you out. So pray for the nation. Thanks again. Take care, and God bless.